This episode of the Inner Hoe Uprising is sponsored by Native and Dipsy.
This episode of the Inner Hoe Uprising is also available for your viewing pleasures on YouTube. If looking at people while they podcast is your thing, then you can click the YouTube link in the show notes and gaze along as we talk our shit. Inner Hoe Uprising. Welcome to the Inner Hoe Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, a black, non-monogamous, pansexual feminist hoe who lives in New York City and whose pronouns are she and her.
And Akua, pronouns she and her, who is a black, queer, demisexual. Why am I trying to do this when I never do?
It was going well to me.
Hey. You actually know what? I am a parent who's trying to do better this week, yes.
Wow. That's what I'll be. Look at that, a little peek back behind the curtains of parenting. Pandemic parenting.
Pre-adolescence parenting. It's wearing me out, y'all.
Boy.
Child. It's wearing me out.
Every episode of the Inner Hoe Uprising works like this. Myself and my lovely rotating co-hosts talk about sex, love, and dating as it pertains to current events in the world, our lives, and yours. And occasionally we hit you with interviews with insightful folks or deep dive episodes into a topic of our choice. This episode, we're talking about how and why to get active locally in your community. People are still fucking, but STD rates have taken a nosedive. We're going to talk about how and why. A review and reminisce session over the UPN classic, My Girlfriends, My Girlfriends, and much, much more.
And if you would like to follow along with this conversation had on this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag InnerHoeUprising so we can see it, and the hashtag Podin so other people can see it. And if you want to follow us on social media, you can do so at InnerHoeUprising without the G on Twitter, at InnerHoeUprising on Instagram and Facebook. You can also join our Facebook group by searching Inner Hoe Uprising Community. That is C-U-M-M-U-N-I-T-Y. And you can head to innerhoeuprising.com to pay a hoe.
If you want to pay us to speak virtually at your school or conference about sex positivity, black feminism, podcasting, or other kinds of topics we discuss on this show, or to host a consent, pleasure, or dating virtual workshop for your organization, we would love to do all of these things and more. So to book us, you can send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com. That email address is in the show notes. Now we're getting into Hoe of the Week. That's our first segment today. Hoe of the Week is where we shout out homies who have supported Inner Hoe Uprising in the past week. Hoes of the Week get special nicknames, and the game, if they choose to participate, is to guess the meaning behind their nicknames. First and foremost, I want to give a shout out to everyone who listens to the show and also follows me on the social medias who have been bigging up my Halloween cosplays. I love the love. Akua, I have nowhere else to put this, so I'll share it with you. I posted my Marge Simpson cosplay on Facebook and it has 30,000 shares.
Yes, because it's that. It is that. Yes.
I just didn't expect it to go that viral, especially on Facebook, because like I only post stuff to Facebook that Instagram lets me.
Yeah.
Like, I just click that button. It's like, oh, okay, that's there now too. And 30,000 motherfuckers saw that.
But the best yet. Just the Beyonce of Halloween. You just keep blowing my mind each and every time. I can't wait for next year.
Thank you. Oh, there's one coming today, though.
Ooh!
And then I'm done for the Halloween season, obviously, because Halloween's over. Yes, but thank you for everyone for the cosplay love. Then also, we want to thank Ryan P, aka your nickname is Ryan Pro Ho for Show, who became a patron on Patreon. Mariel EB, whose nickname is Dreyfus, who became a patron on Patreon. We got, okay, your name may be pronounced Ada or Ida. Jay, but your nickname is Aida. Aida.
In the tune of Taina?
I wanted to see that play.
Oh, no, in the tune of Aida, remember that,
the Broadway show Aida?
Yes. Yes.
To that tune. And I was trying to find what that song was called last night, and it's not called Aida, apparently, so I couldn't find it.
Wow.
I could not find, or maybe they say that in every song. I don't know, but your nickname is Aida, who upped their pledge on Patreon. Also shout out to Heather H, aka Triple H, who became a patron on Patreon, and shout out to Philip M, aka Uncle Phil, for real, who upped their pledge on Patreon, and it is a hefty pledge. So thank you, Uncle Phil. He's like the real Uncle Phil, or they're like the real Uncle Phil. Just rich as hell over there. No, I'm kidding. I don't know what your financial status is.
We don't know what your pockets look like.
But we do appreciate your support.
That you share it with us. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. If you would like to become a hoe of the week and get a cool nickname of your own, there are some things you can do. They are. You can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. You can leave us a 5-star review on Stitcher. You can feature us in an article you've written, or shout us out on social media. These are some non-monetary ways you can support us. We love monetary and non-monetary support, and we understand that as the world just gets more uncertain every single day, monetary support is not feasible for many folks, so please do not spend your last dollars on us. That is a command and a demand. But if you can spare some change, you can donate to us on PayPal by going to paypal.me/innerho, or become a patron on Patreon by going to patreon.com/innerhouprising. The links to all of those are in the show notes. Also, a reminder that if you do become a patron on Patreon for $2 a month, you can participate in things like our Slack chat, our patron-only film nights, and for $5 a month, you can join our Monday night Zoom hangout. And at any patron tier, you can receive access to our episodes a few days early and entry to our workshops and parties. Now we're going to do a segment that we call Self-Care Tip of the Week. This is a segment where we give you some tips on how to care for yourself. All right, so if you're hearing this right now, or later, honestly, and you live in the U.S., the voting period for the 2020 election cycle is officially over. Whew. Doesn't that feel like, isn't it like a load off?
No. Not at all, because we're still in it at the moment.
Yes. At the time we're recording this, we have no idea what's going on. We probably won't have that much of an idea what's going on Wednesday, mm-hmm. or by Tuesday. This comes out that Wednesday. But I think it feels a little bit, okay, I was talking to my therapist about this, and I was like, I'm just ready for it to be over with. Like, no matter what hellfire can happen or may happen, I just want to start the hellfire instead of thinking of the hellfire starting. Mm-hmm. But yes, if you're hearing this right now, I want to say kudos to you for surviving what has been a truly chaotic 4 years. existence in this country if you're a marginalized person, and election cycle. So kudos for surviving all of those time periods, because you have done those.
Yes.
Exactly. So this self-care tip is in two parts. The first is that this episode from here on out will not be about the election. So if you need a good hour to just zone out, please let this episode and previous episodes not rooted in politics be your sanctuary. And if politics is your sanctuary, you can listen to our episodes about those. There you go. We have it all for you. We got it all. The second self-care tip is just a reminder and an encouragement to you. So this is a self-care tip and like kind of a community care tip. So I want to let you know and remind you that your ability to affect change within the world and around you extends far beyond presidential elections. It even extends beyond local elections, both of which I still encourage you to participate in. Your vote counts, and you can contribute to the uplift of your community and your life by methods beyond voting. So the tip here is to get active. Not like the way that people from Brooklyn say it. Not like fighting somebody on the train.
No!
They was finna get active, not that way.
Not that way at all.
But if you gotta do what you gotta do, then.
All right. We understand.
Yeah. All right. So how do you get active? You put your Tims on. No, I'm kidding. Okay. you put on your 8-ball jacket. Niggas who used to wear those used to fuck people up.
Oh.
Okay.
New York right, is enough. A different place.
Yeah, not inside New York jokes. Oh, so funny. Oh, boy. Anyway, how do you get active in your community? So one thing you can do is research and core organizations that align with your values and the kinds of change that you're trying to enact in the world. So that could be associated with like a political affiliation, for example, like Democratic Socialist or something like that, or like the Green Party or the Working Families Party. It's not an endorsement of any of those parties. I'm just saying these are parties that you can become involved with. A demographic of people that you're trying to uplift. So like a local organization that is targeted to Black liberation or sex worker liberation, for example, or an organization that addresses issues within your neighborhood, so on and so forth, like the Friendly Neighbors of Queens. I don't know if that's a real organization. That's also not a endorsement of that organization. I just made something up. You can lend your time to a cause or a population that you care for. So like with COVID trending back up, some neighborhoods and orgs they assemble younger people without comorbidities as volunteers to drop off groceries and meds for vulnerable populations. So that's one way that you can lend your time in your community, the community that you live in. If the community that you're trying to uplift is incarcerated people, for example, some organizations ask for things like phone zaps and email blasts to demand clemency for certain incarcerated folks. So that's another thing that you can do when it comes to lending your time. You can learn what the hell is going on. How do you do that? One thing you can do is attend community meetings, pre and post COVID and during COVID. Right now there are virtual town halls happening around events within communities or around issues within communities. When you attend things like that, you find people with common concerns and you also open your eyes to shit that you didn't realize was going on. You can read and pay for local newspapers. I'm emphasizing local. I'm not talking about the New York Times. That's not a diss to the New York Times or anything like that. I'm just talking about the Jamaica Queens Gazette. That's also not a thing that really exists. I'm just trying to use examples that don't exist right now. But yeah, so like things that where reporters are reporting on things happening right there in your neighborhood. You want to pay for things like that because they are struggling right now. They close every day in mass numbers. And this is a tangent, but there are partisan entities that sounds mysterious and sus, but it is mysterious and sus. There are like partisan entities paying for businesses to create newspapers that are disguised as newspapers that are local newspapers, but really it's being bankrolled by a partisan entity.
Don't like it.
Yeah. No. This is why we have to actually sustain actual local reporting that is being done before it's all gone. Because when it's all gone, the world is fucked. I'm sorry.
Like, that's it. It's all we got.
The world is fucked. The world is fucked.
Tell you the truth.
Yeah, I don't want to mince words. There is some that is very disturbing to me. So I don't like that. I just really hate misinformation, guys. I know I say it every episode, but I really don't like that. You can learn who your local politicians are and what they are doing. That is actually the first step in addressing the everyday shit that you think needs to change. Like if your bus never comes on time, who is responsible for that? You got to know so you can yell at that motherfucker and then they'll stop the bus from not being on time. Obviously, there's a lot of steps in between that, but you know what I mean. The last thing you can do is imagine. You can start small and imagine what a more liberated way of living in your community could be. You can imagine ways that you can build community with others and make that result happen. And you can imagine yourself as a leader and an agent of change because you like really are. So start thinking like that. Some benefits of getting active include starting small and addressing the kinds of change that you can shape can make the world feel a lot less helpless and hopeless. In order for a shift towards liberation to occur, a massive amount of people need to come together to push things. By becoming active, you push us all a little bit closer to getting there. You. It starts with you. I sound like Captain Planet, but it's true.
That was my nigga.
I loved that guy. Yeah.
I enjoyed that show.
And all five of them. Shout out to Kwame specifically.
Shout out to Kwame specifically.
What does that mean? He was born on a Saturday? Ooh, or is it Friday?
Look, don't even get me there. I don't know. We're not going there right now.
Shout out to Kwame either way. Change starts on a small level. The grassroots shifts that you make in your community are the building blocks for statewide, national, and global shifts. And to be honest, it feels good to do something about shit that you believe in, and connecting with people who have shared lived experience as you, especially as we all isolate, feels good too. So that is my self-care tip of the week. I encourage you all to get active. And if you are getting active, or if these uncertain times have, first of all, if you've always been active, shout out to you. Like, you're that motherfucker. Like, Shout out to all the organizers and the people who have been building these spaces day in and day out, pandemic or no pandemic, chaotic presidency or no chaotic presidency. But if this has like awoken you towards getting active, let us know the ways in which you are getting active. And also, shout out to you too. All All right. This Friday, we will be speaking at Poly Dallas Millennium. It will be virtual, but Poly Dallas is always a good time. Akua can vouch for that. Oh, man. Oh, that was so good.
I am happy that it is virtual and that we are, of course, thinking of our communities and keeping each other safe. But I would have loved a trip, y'all, like, because it is a good time in person.
It is a good time.
Which means it will be a good time virtually as well.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. This year's Poly Dallas theme is More to Love. And in that vein, we will be giving folks in attendance a little more to love via our live podcast recording. So we are going to be doing our shtick on Friday, November 6th at 9 p.m. Eastern time. If you already are attending Poly Dallas, we would love to see you there. And if you're not attending Poly Dallas, but you want to have a virtual good time with like-minded, ethical, non-monogamous folk, you can register for this year's virtual Poly Dallas by going to polydallasmillennium.com, the link to which will be in the show notes. All right, next up, how everyone is still fucking, but STDs are STDs? That's funny.
I like it. Yep.
Oh, man. All right. Next up, how everyone is still fucking, but STD rates are taking a nosedive. What's the deal, yo-yo? But before that, with the holiday season right around the corner, we're all getting into the spirit of indulging in the sights and sounds and scents of the season. This is a very niche thing to do, but I personally love to pair the way that I smell with the season. And I love that Native deodorant lets me do that. For example, this fall, I've been rocking their coconut milk and turmeric and buttercream and French vanilla deodorants.
Well, that sounds like a dessert.
It does. It literally has me smelling like a delicious fall treat every single day. I also wear the blood orange and cove one. No, blood. What is it? Blood orange and clove. Yeah.
Oh.
That smells like a fall drink.
I was going to say that sounds like a cocktail.
Yeah, exactly. Like a cocktail. Yeah. And I love it. I just really love it. I love Native so much. It's really no cap. I really love Native. And now that winter is coming up, I've made sure to update my Native collection to their candy cane holiday scent. I haven't received it yet, but I'm so ready to be and smell and feel minty fresh. Native is the perfect addition to your daily routine this holiday. Native deodorants don't just block odor better, they're made better. Native has ingredients you've heard of like coconut oil and shea butter. It's also vegan and never tested on animals. And Native never uses potentially harmful ingredients like aluminum, parabens, sulfates, or talc. Their candy cane gift set also makes for a great gift option. I know that's the season. We got Kwanzaa coming up. We got Christmas coming up. And all Native products are great stocking stuffers for everyone on your list. Native is risk-free to try. Every product comes with free shipping in the U.S., plus free 30-day returns and exchanges. You can see why so many people love Native and check out their over 14,000 five-star reviews. Give the gift of Native by going to nativedo.com/IHU or use promo code IHU at checkout and get 20% off. That's a lot of percents. Your first order. Make sure you order before December 7th to get your products in time for Christmas. That's nativedeo.com/IHU or use promo code IHU. That's I as in inner, H as in ho, U as in uprising. I shine bright in all my different colors, all my different colors, colors. We shine bright in all our different colors, all our different colors. Okay, now we're getting into our segment called Fuck That, which is where we talk about current things in the world through their lens of sex, love, and dating. What's going on in the world, Akua?
All right, so apparently, not in the world, but here in the good old USA. Mm. The good old.
Good.
But good, it cracks you up, right? Here in the United States, rates of chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis have taken an abrupt downturn starting this year, which is the first in over 20 years. So rates have been steadily climbing since basically I was born. And then 2020 said, "Ooh, we're going the other way. We're making a U-E."
Interesting.
Now, this seems like good news. We would think, oh, rates going down? Good. But no, it is actually deceiving and kind of more like a false positive. Mm. And it actually can be a side effect or an impact of COVID-19, Miss Rona. Because, you know, she got her tidbits and everything.
Hands are in everything.
Everything.
Jill of all trades over here.
Right. So contributing factors to the decreased rates of chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis are, one, the limited access to clinics due to our shelter-in-place orders around the country in various states, as a way to mitigate the growing rates of COVID-19.
Yeah.
Contact tracers for gonorrhea and syphilis. So typically when you have been tested positive for gonorrhea or syphilis, or other STDs, they will ask for names and contact information of most recent partners and then reach out to them to let them know that they have been exposed and to go get tested. Those workers, those essential workers, yeah, have now been diverted to COVID-19 contact tracing.
We know we need a lot of those right now.
Yes. Also to emphasize that the contact tracers for STDs were already understaffed because we know how the U.S. works. So yeah, now when you take, you know, the limited resource that we have and divert it to something else, that's a huge impact. Of course, people can be avoiding clinics and going out in general for fear of exposure to COVID-19. And that is a mitigating factor, as well as the essential supplies for testing for STDs are running low due to, again, redirections of swabs, tubes, reagents, and that manufacturers make to produce COVID-19 tests. So this is how Ms. Ronan got her tidbits into the STD side.
Thank you for explaining all of that. This is why, like, you know, when people are very, evil, I think, and they're like, oh, only 1% of the population will die from this, even though, like, in America, that's like 2 million people, mm-hmm, at the very least, like, only in America. But, like, not seeing the big picture impact that a literal pandemic has on everything, mm-hmm, is, that's very sad to me. So, like, I feel like after this, for example, HIV is still an epidemic, not a, mm-hmm, pandemic, but an epidemic. What if it just, like, goes back up to pandemic levels because we weren't able to curtail it during Miss Rona?
And you make a good point here in that when we talk about untreated STDs, such as the ones I'm specifically referring to, if they're left untreated, they have effects such as becoming a disease, becoming pelvic inflammatory disease. It has impact on our reproductive organs. Yeah. It has impact on our health that then need treatment, you know, and puts a strain on our medical system, on our medical care system, as well as when we talk about the policies for insurance, does that now qualify as a pre-existing condition? Like, you know, the foolishness they get into, you know, when it comes to access to health care. This is how it impacts it without even thinking. When you're not thinking of the bigger picture, this is how it all links. It's like, you know, 6 degrees of separation or whatnot. That's for people, isn't it? That's for people.
That is for people. This is, the universe is all connected.
You know, everything is interconnected. They're not these separate entities. They're not these separate phenomenons. So yes, now there's belief that the drops in these rates are indicative of a COVID impact rather than less sexual activity, because the decrease is more pronounced in gonorrhea and chlamydia, which the test supplies have been affected, rather than syphilis and HIV, which are detected through blood tests. So through gonorrhea and chlamydia are tested through swabs and these urinary tubes and all these things that have been redirected for COVID manufacturing. But HIV is detected through blood tests, and those numbers continue to remain where they were pre-COVID.
So when it comes to this, that's interesting. So, like, if you try to get a gonorrhea or a chlamydia swab, are some people just being, like, denied that because it's just like, oh, we don't have the swabs in the laboratory right now? Or is it, like, a matter of certain clinics or whatever, or maybe, like, when you go to a primary care, they just, like, offer it without you asking, and now they're not offering it because it's not in the lab?
Yes. So it is a combination of people not coming in to get tested as often as they would because of
fear of COVID exposure?
Not just the fear of COVID exposure, but the way that we've changed how we interact with our preventative care system. Mm-hmm. So now when you're going to the doctor, the schedules are spaced out in a way that they weren't, which they should have, because you give people 15-minute appointments and they don't get seen till 3 o'clock, but we're not going to go there. You know, and they're all packed in a waiting room, waiting and waiting and waiting. Now appointments are spaced out, which means less appointments per day. There are regulations in that they're, you know, taking temperatures. Like, there's all of these regulations that make that create an inaccess in a way, you know, mm-hmm. or is a lot different than what we are used to. Mm-hmm. So because of that, they are, you know, if you're not symptomatic, and these STDs can be asymptomatic in people. So if you're not symptomatic, they will not be, you know, so readily to offer you a test mm-hmm. in the way that they would have before, because we need the appointment for someone else, you know, to bring you in and to test you if you're not. But then there's the double edge, because these STDs can be asymptomatic in people, you know. Yeah. I was, in my research, I was reading, and I can't remember where, I wish I had quoted it, that there is a recommendation for people who are positive with HIV to be tested for other STDs every 3 months, and now they have pushed that to every 6 months. But when we're talking about STDs that are asymptomatic, you know, that can grow and worsen in someone if, you know, now they're following the doctor's recommendation of, let's do this every 6 months. Again, all trying to curtail COVID and the amount of gathering of people that is unnecessary, quote unquote, or not as essential, quote unquote.
Damn.
So I wanted to go into the figures and the rates of these STDs, and not to talk about them in this kind of vague, mm-hmm. abstract way. So the CDC's preliminary 2019 figures indicated that there was 1.76 million cases of chlamydia in the U.S., 602,000 cases of gonorrhea, with cases of newborn syphilis increasing 22% since 2018. In 2018, there was 1.8 million cases of chlamydia, 583,000 cases of gonorrhea, 115,000 cases of syphilis, with 1,306 cases of syphilis being in newborns reported that year. So yeah, not in this abstract way. This is affecting a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
The reported cases at the beginning of 2020 were higher than those during the same period of 2019, started to plummet by mid-March, and that's where a lot of our shelter in place orders started to pop up. And then by early April, weekly reports of chlamydia were 53% below the 2019 number, so like literally cut in half, and gonorrhea and syphilis were 33% lower. So like literally a sharp decrease, where when we were starting, they were higher than where they were in 2019, and then all of a sudden, boom.
Cut in half.
So why does this matter? Because much like COVID, this is a social justice issue as well as a medical one. And we know that there are higher rates of STDs in more marginalized communities, those that we are speaking to right now, Black people, folks of color, LGBTQ, underage, we're thinking our adolescents, as well as our geriatric population. People don't be knowing that they've been getting it in.
Yeah, me too.
And without protection, not due to access, well, sometimes due to access because of stigma of sexual behaviors in our elders, but also, you know, their false beliefs that now they can't get pregnant, so we just be out here.
Yeah.
I used to work in a senior living facility. Yo, they be out here. Like, yo, anytime someone was in this and you was like, where did Paula and Jeanette go?
I'm weak. That's the other kind of getting active.
Exactly. And we have to like go search their rooms, like, yo, don't be in here doing the do, especially if they had dementia. But that's a whole nother thing. Oh, and the predatory behaviors that I saw of the old men choosing women with dementia. Oh, I was ready to square up with those.
Rape culture never stops, son.
I was ready to
see. This is why these old rapey ass niggas like Bill Cosby should still be in jail. Cause like, just cause you old don't mean you not rapey. You still rapey.
Still rapey. Like, oh man,
never unlearned it.
Had to keep my eye on this one man. We don't get into it, but I had to keep my, cause he knew what he was doing. Oh yeah. So yeah, that. That is why that matters. That, you know, the rates are higher for our folks, as well as we already don't have access to health care. We have disproportionate access to health care in this country. And we also have a history of, you know, continued pervasive fear and distrust of medical institutions in ways that they have abused us and our bodies. Mm-hmm. And all of that, again, interlayered, exasperate what's happening with this false this false decline of STD rates. So I was thinking again, of course, what is the response? What can we do? What is happening to address this? And there was a summary report by the National Coalition of STD directors that identified some interventions. So there are now STD clinics throughout the country that are making at-home self-collection testing a viable alternative for people for in-person STD testing. And they are creating and, of course, trying to expand their budgets for at-home self-collection testing, as well as the sexual health clinics are implementing telehealth programs to conduct STD screenings and diagnoses, and then providing treatment when they can through oral and self-dispensable medications, rather than like penicillin shots and things that have to be administered in person. And many clinics have made telehealth screening calls a requirement before allowing patients with symptoms to come in for testing. This is, you know, not perfect because, again, I mentioned that these symptoms can be asymptomatic, but definitely if it's someone who does have symptoms or are worried, these are processes they can go into and then have more education about the procedure once they get in the clinic if fear of COVID exposure is a big concern or a barrier for them. And then I was thinking, of course, as we're doing the nasty, and I'm sure some of y'all are not doing the nasty with a mask on, but do a nasty with a mask on your face and on your willies. Get them condoms together, get them dental dams. And let's try to practice more safe sex.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for unpacking that. That is important and something that I think was kind of getting missed there within the continuous news cycle of the obvious things that have been affected by COVID-19. I have two thoughts about the new measures, the new like telehealth distance do it yourself kind of measures, which I think it's cool that they're taking that, though that is people work in the space's job to do it, so but that's still a cool job. I'm glad it exists. I think the do it yourself measures, I'm curious to see what that looks like in terms of, okay, how do I do this? And if it's actually accessible to people in giving out instructions and stuff like that. Like, this reminds me of yesterday. It wasn't being recorded because me and Aku are friends and we have conversations that aren't recorded. But we were talking about voting and you were like, do I do it in pencil or blue pen or black pen? And where do I drop it off? And all these kinds of things. And those things are, I think, like written on the paper and like on the websites, like written in text and stuff like that. But one, they're confusing, honestly. And then two, what if your reading comprehension is not up to the standard of what's being written, for example? Or what if your eyesight is, is it audibly accessible if it's on a paper ballot and you don't have access to the internet, for example? So like, one time I didn't go fully through with it, though I might, but whatever, this is a tangent. But like one time I signed up for a study, like a nationwide study that analyzes people's genomes or whatever to affect more preventative care health outcomes. One thing I thought was really cool was their consent form, because it was like it was a very plain language consent form, as opposed to like the terms and conditions of like iTunes, for example, which is what are y'all talking about? And why is this 4,000 pages? So it was like very short. And it had like videos to go along with it, and the videos had pictures and demonstrated things, and they also had subtitles and stuff like that, and it was in multiple languages. So I just question if these things will have something similar where it's like anybody can understand how to do this. Because, you know, if you don't understand how to do it, you might mess up and get like a false negative, and then what happens after that? And then the second one, the okay. So I guess it's good. Okay, I don't know. My biggest and worst experiences when it comes to sexual health care has been from primary care providers who are not specifically at sexual clinics or sexual health clinics. So I don't know how good or bad, quote unquote, sexual health clinics are when it comes to this. But like, there have been many times where I've tried to get either preventative sexual health measures or like just like testing where I didn't have symptoms and been discouraged by primary care providers. And also primary care providers, I'm sure, as most people in the medical space are exhausted from COVID-19. So it was already like a space where people were discouraging just like taking care of your sexual health. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like people, like some providers might not even want you to come in the first place. So mm-hmm. I can see a call going like, oh yeah, you know, this, I was exposed to this partner or whatever. And a healthcare provider being like, okay, well, do you like, is this symptom popping up? Is this symptom popping up? And if you say no, I could very easily see someone saying, well, don't come in.
Definitely. And that's, that's like intentional and biased misdiagnoses because they don't want to deal with you. Yeah. Or they don't want you to come in.
Yeah. So curious to see how those things are going to shape out. But yeah, we'll be following this story. Next up, we're taking a walk down memory lane courtesy of Mrs. Mara Brock Akil and her girlfriends. They're through thick and thin. But first, is the conversation in this episode so far resonating with you? Is it helping you learn some new shit, helping you unlearn some old shit, or just allowing you to have a good ass time? Don't all speak at once, but I'm hearing that you say that it is. Ah, yes, we love to hear that. We would also love for you to support the continuation of conversations like these. If you're listening to us on a podcast app, you can take a moment to subscribe to us or drop 5 stars and leave a rating and review for the homies. If you got a little extra change, you can drop some cash in the PayPal by going to paypal.me/innerho, or you can come join our Patreon community and access things like our chat and virtual events for as low as $2 a month by going to patreon.com/innerhouprising, or at the very least you can just hit up your friend and say, yo, listen to this podcast, I like it, I think it's very good. Either way, we thank and love you all for your continued support. Okay, Akua, I need that good phone sex operator voice that you do so well.
Let's rinse the palate, y'all. Y'all hype me up so much, I'm telling you, phone sex work is in my future.
I mean, if you want a little extra change, man. It's not like you don't talk to people all day anyway.
Exactly.
About to get sensual, y'all.
I'm getting into a mindset. Okay, I'm in character.
What's the character's name?
I don't know.
Roxy.
Roxy. Or Candy. When our routines are changed, it's easy to forget to check in with yourself. How are you feeling? Do you need a break? Do you need to hit pause and take a moment for yourself? Well, Dipsy can help. Dipsy is an audio app full of short, sexy stories and guided sessions that are designed to turn you on and help you get in touch with yourself. The stories are relatable and immersive, so you feel like you're right there. And there's something for everyone, whoever and whatever you're into. They add new content every week, so there's always more to explore. Find stories about a spontaneous hookup with that hot stranger, getting closer with that sexy yoga instructor you can't stop thinking about, or even stories about trying that new toy together or getting tied up. The wellness sessions can also help you unlock new confidence or heighten intimacy with your partner. They add new stories every week, so you never get bored. Spice things up today with Dipsy. And for our listeners right here on this show, Dipsy is offering a 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/IHU. That's 30 days free trial when you go to DIPSEA dipsystories.com/IHU. dipsystories.com/IHU. Have fun.
Ooh.
There's a wink there. Wink.
Bow chicka wow wow. That made me want to tooch my booch up. That was pretty sexy.
Thank you. I try.
You never fail. Practice. You always hit it. You always hit it. Okay, now we are getting into a very special segment this week because it is not only Sam Presents Ask Media, it is Akua and Sam Present Ask Media. That is a segment and a play on the term mass media where we talk about book, TV, podcast, film, we review them. These are content that specifically relate to sex, love, dating, and or gender, and typically they're spoiler-free reviews. This one will not be. On today's episode, as we've mentioned throughout this episode, we will be reviewing the first half of Mara Brock Akil's hit sitcom, My Girlfriends,
My Girlfriends.
Love it. Why are we doing this? Because this airs the day after Election Day, and we wanted to give you a lighthearted episode. So,
sure did.
This show has also been out for 8 million years now, I think, so it will be a spoiled review because, come on. Like,
it's spoiled as hell.
Okay. So my main thoughts before we dive in episode by episode are, okay, so I remember the vibes and the characters and just being amused by the show. Like if somebody were to talk about Girlfriends, I'd be like, oh yeah, I like Girlfriends. But I did not remember anything about what happened in the series. Like, I didn't remember the like plot points. Mm-hmm. So rewatching as an adult has been interesting, entertaining, and sometimes grating. My favorite moments are the ridiculous humor. Like, one of my favorite things is Maya being a hotep. I did not remember her being that much of a hotep, but that shit is fucking hilarious to me. Or like the thing with fucking Marcus's hips, man.
No, I love Marcus with the big hips. Like,
it is problematic, but it's very silly.
Exactly. It's very problematic, but very hilarious. And also, I think my lens of watching it as a child is definitely different than my lens it now.
Yes,
which allows us to like really see some of these things that we don't remember because we weren't checking for them when we were younger.
That's true.
I remember watching it and like really seeing sisterhood and like really aspiring for that when I got to be that age, which I also thought that age was old, and now I'm at here at that age. I'm like, girl,
I'm baby.
You've achieved so much at that bright old age of 28, and you're complaining about I don't got a man.
Yeah, that's another thing. But okay.
And it's a stark difference. Like, I don't know, because I wasn't 28 back when this show aired. I was 8. So I don't know if the things that they achieved were actually like attainable back then. Like, she was 29 with a whole house, which then comes to find out that like her grandmother left her that house, but I don't know if that's like relatable.
I mean, black home ownership is not relatable.
Like,
it exists, but it's not a relatable aspect in America. So I think like, being a black lawyer is not relatable.
Well, not relatable, like realistic, I think was the word I was looking for. Even, but either way,
yeah. Yeah, it's not realistic either. I mean, it's not commonplace is the word.
Yes.
Commonplace. Yes, there are black lawyers, and yes, I know you niggas is buying your fucking houses. Shut the fuck up about it. But it's
commonplace. Continue, Sam. I'm sorry.
So those are the things that I enjoy. Oh, yeah, I also really enjoy the intentional platonic love moments. Mm-hmm. So, like, where it's, like, really, like, you know, at the end of an episode, it'll be like, okay, girl, we had our beef for the first 25 minutes or like 20 minutes or like 15 minutes, like 20 minute episode. And then in the last 5 minutes, they hash it out and you see how much they love each other, like as friends. I'm just like, oh, yes, I love those parts. And my least favorite moments are the girl I need a man moments, which is like 75% of the show.
It really is. So 75% of the show.
That was difficult for me in watching it. Do you have any initial thoughts before we dive in?
Even like rewatching it, I love their platonic moments, but it really, like, watching it, I realized how toxic it was. Like,
friendship wise
Yeah, friendship wise. Yeah. In the same way that cattiness between women is normalized or made to seem like what it is, I think that was also the culture and still is the culture then. So like I low key like aspired to that, like believing that we had to have our fallouts to come back together and have this real love. And then comparing that to my friendships now where we like 98% of the time are just good. Like, yeah, there is no drama. I'm not dating nobody's man behind they back. Yeah. Like, I'm not calling y'all out y'all names. Our shade isn't like really I'm trying to get at you and your traumas. Like,
yeah,
it's none of that. Like, yeah, we're shady in a funny way, but like
not like that. Not like,
yeah, we rarely shade each other.
Nobody's
anyway.
Trying to like cut for blood or anything like
exactly.
that, you know.
So like watching, I was like, ooh, like I would have never, not in my friend group.
Me too. I kind of have a, so I felt like that too, and we'll get into it, but like I hated some characters the first couple episodes because I'm like, why y'all so mean? But
why?
But also, you know, and I definitely think that it plays into stereotypes about women and being catty and stuff like that, but sitcom niggas are just mean. And it kind of started to like, I think that that's why I don't, I think I just didn't find them that funny anymore. But I used to really like sitcoms, especially King of Queens. But I don't really like sitcoms anymore. And I remember like growing up and being very, very disturbed by My Wife and Kids and how mean they were to Junior.
Yo, I couldn't watch that show.
Yeah,
everybody
like,
goes, it's so funny.
So mean to this nigga?
But y'all was so mean. And then they were
not
was,
in ways that was even funny to me. And
that
I was
like, even funny.
Why is this happening? It was
that's
odd.
That's a show that I've maybe watched like 10 episodes. Like, I don't know it in the way of other sitcoms because of the way they treated him. And there was a portion in which, like, he got a girl pregnant and had to go live in the garage. And it was like a beaut. Like, that show was not funny. That show was not funny to me at all. Yeah. I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all.
Sitcoms are just kind of strange. And like, I don't want anybody listening to this for the first time to be like, oh, this bitch has no sense of humor or something like that. I laugh at a lot of shit. Dark, light, all that kind of shit. But it's just like, I just don't find humor from it. And I don't know. It's just like people ragging on each other is like a common sitcom trope. Like, even if we take it out of black sitcoms, let's talk about what the fuck is that not funny shit with the nerds.
Big Bang
yes,
Theory.
Big Bang Theory.
I love that show. But
okay. I can see the humor in it, but it just stopped being funny to me. I used to watch that. But they rag the fuck out of you. Like, that's just the point of the show. Like, it's just them ragging on each other. I was going to say Cosby Show, but we don't have to talk about that, nigga. Even, like, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, where we really saw the connective moments, that's also, like, half Carlton getting on Will getting on Carlton, somebody getting on Hillary getting on somebody, Jeffrey shading the
Jeffrey
shit out of
the
everybody.
Shit.
Yeah.
Jeffrey with the shit.
Jeffrey shading the shit out of everybody. Another thing that's talked about often now that we look at history through a different lens or things that happened in the 90s through a different lens was the relationship between Pam and Martin and people saying like, oh, you know, that's just what it was. They were ragging on each other and other people being like, oh,
like
it's happening
either.
Because
I'm sorry. Martin was a show that I couldn't, I did not like that relationship between him and Pam at all. At that time. And I don't think, maybe now I can realize what it was, but I never thought it was funny. Like, I was just like, why are you always talking to her like that?
Like,
what the fuck? And why is everybody letting this happen? Like, that used to irk me as a young, dark-skinned girl. I did not like it. Mm-hmm. I was like, why the fuck is he talking to her like that? And why are everybody just sitting here? Like,
yeah, it's the why is everybody just sitting here that's always kind of weird, right? But I don't, so I don't know. Obviously, like, things inform things, so we can't take a man making like calling a dark-skinned woman a dog out of the context of the fact that colorism actually exists, specifically colorism towards dark-skinned black women. But then there also is this nature of sitcom characters just ragging on other sitcom characters. It's just interesting.
I think there's just a threshold for me that certain shows hit very easily. That may not be for other people, but there were certain shows that just I just couldn't.
That's fair. Also, if the comedy don't hit, like, it's not saying like certain kinds of, not everybody's gonna find the exact same thing funny. So if the comedy really isn't hitting, then I'm just not going to like the show anymore, you know, or at all. So that's interesting. Maybe we should just
like
do
even
a whole
if we take it to Kings and Queens, which is also a show that I would catch on reruns. Mm-hmm. There comes to a certain season where I don't remember
Carrie
the
kept
name.
Getting on Doug.
Like his weight, yeah. Like it was just like
I agree with that.
How are
yeah,
y'all married?
That's when it stopped being funny to me too. It was just like, damn, do y'all just hate each other? Like, is there even? Is this even that funny anymore?
I thought, you know, and, you know, fat phobia aside, there are some things you could chuckle at. You there were some things that I could chuckle at, but that it literally at like, I don't know what season it was. It was just like, yo, yeah. How are you married to someone like
yeah,
this?
That?
Like,
got to be a bit much, too.
It got to be too much.
Yeah. I think even 2.5 Men, granted, I think everybody stopped watching after Charlie Sheen left. That's a whole nother thing about Charlie Sheen, and Ashton Kutcher was there for some reason. But I remember feeling a little bit like uncomfortable with it as the kid started growing up, and like they didn't give him any room to like actually be a person, and they would just like talk to him like he was like an unintelligent kid, and it's just like I feel like he needs nurturing right now. So yeah, sitcoms, man, they're interesting. But let's get into girlfriends. All right, so episode one was, what was the premise of episode one? I think there's just a party. Like,
it is Joan's birthday.
Oh, it's her birthday. That's why there was a party.
It is her birthday. It's her 29th birthday. Joan is having a little intimate get together with her friends, and her best friend since the age of 8 comes with a date. Nobody else has a date but Tony, and comes with her ex boyfriend. Now, this just wasn't a nigga that she, you know, hit it and quit it with. She still goes shopping with his mama. How you gonna bring her ex to her birthday party?
That's trifling.
The ex was Toe Sucking Charles. I love you. I love this show. Only black woman, Toe Sucking Charles. And
I like how things are associated with the things that person just like. Okay.
You can say it because I know what you're going to say. You can say it. It's okay.
Okay, so in our friend group, me, Akua, and people we went to high school with, there is a man named Pencil Dick.
There is a man that I had sexual intercourse with that we ascribe to as Pencil Dick because... That's it.
Yeah, like there's a person and some sort of trait probably around them sexually, and that is just how we know this person. Like, I think it was last year, right? Was that last year? Cool. When we went to Jersey, that was definitely last year. Oh God, this year has been so long. But last year, somebody had a one night stand with a man who left like marks on the wall or something
there
like
were
that.
Handprints on the wall,
and we were calling him like Handprint, whatever his name is.
Yes.
Like, yeah, that is relatable. All these men with their traits and their names is very, very relatable.
And I love it. It also speaks to like early 2000, late 90s, early 2000 culture, and that toe sucking was, you know, kind of like salacious. He's sucking on toes, and I'm like, a nigga has to put my toe in his mouth at some point during our sexual encounter, or the sex was whack. Because there are plenty of times in which my ankles are by your ears, and there is reach. You
why
can
not?
Do it. So
pop
why
it
not?
If pop, you, pop it in there.
If you can see my foot in the peripheral of your eye and you don't think, let me add extra pleasure by putting a toe in my mouth, we're not doing this again. We're not doing this again. I actually was watching a porno.
Yeah.
I was watching a porno. I hate the word porn.
I was like, okay, we just really in the 90s right now.
And... where like the woman's foot was within his area, like within his mouth area, he did not put it in his mouth, and I had to turn off. Said, "This is whack. I gotta go." Like the connection is there. Think. Let's come on now. Come on.
Especially as a porn star, like that's your job. Like
that
make it a little hot.
To
make
bring
it a little hot.
Yes. So yeah.
Improv.
So the fact that it was just this thing, Toe Sucking Charles. I loved it. You know, and they delved into, I think Tony continued to see him, and they delved into like his foot fetish.
All right. Episode two, they're all at a restaurant and Joan says, I haven't had sex in a minute or something like that. And Davis is flirting with her. She takes the flirtatious play and her friends are like, girl, you got to get some dick. They're not saying it like that, but they're like, girl, you got to get some dick. And she's like, all right, let me just try it with Davis. And she gets him to take her home, and he does. And he's like, I have a... I have a fiance.
Mm-hmm.
And then she lies and tells her friends that she got dick anyway, even though he mm-hmm. just needs to change his shirt. Oh, because he was the person she threw up on. my thoughts about this episode, I wrote down Maya gets on my nerves, Tony gets on my nerves. And I think that was like the heat of them trying to demonstrate the tension between them and them not liking each other.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that they didn't like each other was so ridiculous to me, particularly mm-hmm. on Tony's end, because it was just like classist and not funny.
Mm-hmm.
I just hated it. I just did not like it. I did not like them. I was like, I don't remember hating them this much. But as that eases out, as the season progresses, mm-hmm. I like both of them a lot more now. This episode had some cut scenes that I liked. I think that this show does cut scenes well. There was like a question about why men hold their dicks, and like it cut to a whole bunch of different men explaining why they hold their dicks. That was funny. Then there was like a moment where Joan was like, maybe I just need some white friends, and then it like cuts to white women just being like, oh my God, I need to tape the episode of Friends that's on tonight. I'm just like, oh, I love that. I wrote down Lynn is a free spirit. It's calming. And I think it was just like the Maya and Tony thing, mm-hmm. like her not being a part of that was just like, oh, that's very nice. But then there's also like colorist implications in that, where it's like the two darker skinned women are fighting and the light skinned woman is the fucking carefree peacekeeper. So that's a bit weird. All right. So episode 3, they're interested in going to a club, and Maya says, okay, I can get you into like this club in the hood, or I can get you into this club that's like a quote unquote upscale club or whatever. And Tony says, I don't want to go in the club in the hood, because she's a classist. And I don't believe that you actually have the hookup to get into the upscale club. Turns mm-hmm. out she does get the hookup. Joan decides to, but Maya doesn't want to let her into the club because she was being classist towards her and mean. So Joan and everybody else go into the club with her. And Maya gets Tony gets mad about that. And some woman tries to press them, or tries to press Tony specifically. And they all get into a fight, and Joan doesn't jump in. And later she's like, I'm a lawyer. What the fuck do you think I'm doing? What you think I'm going to be out here fighting? Mm-hmm. And Tony is like, yeah, I'm your best friend. I was getting my ass kicked. You should have helped me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the premise of that one. Only thing I say about that is, if my friend is getting their ass kicked, I'm swinging.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, therapists are not professional or not. I'm not going to let swinging. You beat my friend at. Like, exactly. No, we fighting.
We
and
I'm
going to think about that later.
Yeah, no, we're which fighting also, immediately.
Which is also interesting. Because in another season, okay, no, she still had that kind of sentiment. In another season, she is dating this younger guy, and they go to a club, and she accidentally takes E. She actually accidentally takes ecstasy. And I remember that episode because they made it seem like he was like, had her strung out on opiates. It was so like 90s do not do drugs ever, that it was like, y'all need to calm the hell down. Like, we have all popped a tab or something, like, relax. But they made it seem like she was about to just be, you know, at AA meetings or NA meetings for the rest of her life.
Yeah.
Whew, so over dramatized. But there was a point where, oh no, this is what I'm getting at. They were at this like makeout spot, you know, such TV things, like this makeup spot in like the mountains or whatever, and then the police or the park rangers came and busted them up, and she got caught, so she went to jail. And she continued to, her friends were like, you're a lawyer, you can't be going to jail, but she continued to see him anyway. So I find that interesting, in that you can't fight for your friend when someone's beating her up, but for this guy you can go to jail, and that doesn't, you know, and he gets a second chance, so that, you know, that can really be detrimental to your career.
Prioritizing romantic relationships over platonic and honestly familial relationships.
And that would not be me, because guess what? Nah. I'm fighting.
I'm definitely fighting. Without a question. I'm happily fighting.
This is why I try to keep drunk Sam calm, because drunk Sam is with the shits, y'all. And I always have to, I'm like, no, Sam, let it go, because I'm not prepared to fight in this moment. But drunk Sam is with the shit. Like, no
That's
question.
Funny. That is definitely true. And you can ask anybody that.
I always have to be the peacemaker when Sam is drunk. I'm like, yo.
But honestly, niggas really be trying it. And it gets on my fucking nerves. People really try it. Like, people like, people have like touched us. And it's just like, don't touch me and don't touch my fucking friends. What is your problem?
Well, not in that high of a situation, but like it's such a split difference in that sober Sam is so rational and so peaceful. She's like, oh no, let's think about, you know, let's talk this through. But drunk Sam is with the shit. Like, she don't care. There's not a talk, nothing. So then it flips where I feel like when I'm sober, I'm ready. Like, I'm ready to go. I'm like, we can fight though. Like, there's not an issue.
Let's get active, baby. All right. Episode four is where Joan meets a man online.
On the internet.
And the man ends up being Marcus with the big hips. So yeah, the internet thing, they were just like, you on the only desperate people meet people on the internet. I would never do that. That could be a serial killer. That could be a murderer, which hops into Maya's whole Hotep thingy or whatever. And now it's just like, how do you not meet someone on the internet?
Now in the good year of 2020.
Yeah, that like things, that was a whole 180. That was like a whole 180. That was so
I don't think I've met a man outside of the internet in the past 5 years.
Exactly. Like, exactly. That is so interesting. Another thing that was funny, not funny, but like ironic, was I don't remember what instance she made it, but I think she was making fun of Maya, obviously. But Tony makes a joke about, I think, Maya liking Destiny's Child. And it's like, Beyonce rules the world.
I don't remember that, but that is hilarious.
Some things have not aged well. That is one of them. But it's cool to be all time capsule-y like that. Yeah, my other thoughts, Hotep Maya is so funny to me. It's so funny to me. I also see like how certain things may have shaped what I thought as a child and not that I didn't remember specifically, but like watching all of these black sitcoms and things like that, like maybe that is why I find when a man has hips, even to this day, like a little, oh wow, okay, that's interesting, like that's out of the norm, like still finding that to this day. Or like when any conspiratorial thing medically might be happening towards black people, it's always the Tuskegee experiment that we say first, even though none of us learned that shit in like elementary school, middle school, or high school, but like we've been saying that for like years and years and years now, and like that's one of the things that Maya says in the episode. So I'm like, oh, maybe it was just like those kinds of indoctrinations, whether good or bad, that like stuck with us. You have any other thoughts about that episode?
Why'd they put that man in a girdle, Samantha? Why they did that to that man? To this day.
Oh, God.
They did not have to pull out the Spanx for that man. Why they did that? It wasn't even that bad. It was not even bad. That's whenever I think about Marcus with the big hips, that's my question. Why did they have to put that? They literally... And the fact that she was so disgusted by his
shapewear.
And I'm like, you don't have shapewear? Because I've had shapewear since I was 8. Like, I literally.
Yeah. Joan is, though, disgusted by everything.
Everything.
Like, one thing be wrong with a nigga. She's just like it's like that meme. Like, you see a nigga in his socks or something like that. Yeah.
And that's it. Joan's like, oh no, it won't work. I can't marry him. You've been on 2 dates, Joan. How are we marrying this man?
She gets so disgusted.
She's so preoccupied with finding a husband, and then it's so easily turned off. She's not sticking it through.
Yeah.
Because you have to be the perfect man, and always.
Exactly. Episode 5 is the fallout of Marcus with the big hips. They actually start dating. She sets his hips aside. And... I guess the spark is just not there. She's not feeling it. He's a little bit too attentive, which is kind of toxic of her. But I guess he's too attentive and not... I guess the chase is not there any longer. I think that's what's pulling her out of it. My standout thing of this episode was the transphobia. So her friends are doing all these different schemes to get him to break up with her or whatever. And I think it's William who says Joan used to be a man.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just didn't age well. One of those things that did not age well.
The transphobia hops out real quick.
Yeah. Even at some moment, William says, not that there's anything wrong with being a transsexual. And it's like, okay, that's also dated language. But then they start talking and they like stigmatize transness in all these different ways. And it's just like, like, did you write that in there as like, oh, I'm not a bigot, but I'm still going to get these jokes off. Like, was that the point of making William say that? Because by trying to use that as a deterrent to dating someone, that is literally saying that there is something wrong. Wow. So interesting. Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts about that episode?
No. I want to go back to the previous episode because I believe as they are all internet dating, William is also internet dating.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
And that's when he meets Yvonne.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. When she's played out to be like this really crazy
cop.
And I didn't like that.
I didn't like that either. I don't like her as a character. And I wasn't sure why. So I wasn't going to say anything about it. Like, I wasn't sure if that was me playing on like deep down biases that I have in my life, or if she's really just an annoying character, you know.
I'm not gonna call you out and say it's your biases, but I noticed that characters like Yvonne pull at this respectable classist thing in me. So that's me. Maybe that is for you as well, and why you didn't like her at first.
Mm-hmm.
But as I rewatched it, I did like her.
Okay.
Like, now that I can identify that within myself in all areas, not just the show, she didn't bother me as much.
Okay. I think that she is played, there is like a respectable thing there. And that's also like, I think that plays on the tension between her and William and why he's not interested in her at first. And then they're like two people of opposite sides of the whatever. And that's why they're cool. I think I don't like her because like Maya is also someone who's pitted as a different class from everybody else. And I love her.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're both characters, and all the characters are, honestly, but like played up for comic relief at some point. Mm-hmm. And I like more subtle humor than over the top, you're yelling humor. And I think that she is kind of just like, this is so crazy. And it's just like not funny to me. So it's just a bit annoying.
Mm-hmm.
But I will continue to unpack that because maybe I'm a piece of shit. Maybe I am indeed a piece of shit. So thank you for bringing that up. Episode 6, should we go to episode 6?
Yes.
Okay, episode 6 was a Halloween episode, which is very important because I watched it the day before Halloween. That is the episode where Joan has a costume party. Shout out to Joan being the friend who throws all the parties, man. She has a costume party, and Tony brings one of her new men, and it is revealed that he is a furry. He likes to have sex with the third being a teddy bear or some other plushy character, though they do not say furry specifically. Lynn is the one who pegs his kink, and she calls it being a plushy. So yeah, this maybe before that, but I think this is like the standout where we see Lynn as the quote-unquote sexual deviant person, like whenever it's quote-unquote deviant sexual behavior, whether it be group sex or this or voyeurism, Lynn is the person who knows about it. So maybe that is why, one of the reasons why I liked Lynn as a child and couldn't remember why, but I definitely dig that. Though I do think it's interesting that the person who is light skinned and the person who is half white is the person who is allowed to be in the know about all these kinds of things and not be the one to stigmatize all these kinds of things. So that's interesting. Though Joan is also light skinned and in real life is half white. And is she? Is Tracy Ellis Ross half white? I think she is.
Yes, she is. I think she's biracial.
And she is like adamantly against the furry thing. Actually, she's a very what's the word I would say? She's not all that sex positive, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. She's not all that sex positive.
No, she's not.
So, yeah. But we do explicitly know that as a character, Lynn is the person who grew up white. She grew up with an adoptive white family and is half white. So it's interesting. This is an episode where I wrote down the I'm 29 and I'm not married and I need to find a man talk bores me. So at episode 6, I had had it.
Samantha was done. Okay. Checks out.
Yeah. Like, does it have to be every episode at every given moment in time?
Yes. Yeah.
Because like, it's early, Halloween, bitch. There's other stuff to talk about.
Early 2000s said, if you are a woman with a career and a house and you ain't got no husband, you need to find one. Because you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, that is definitely what they said.
Ooh, child.
I'm tired of it. That's my thoughts for episode 6. Any other for you?
No, I really loved the inclusion of this furry aspect. I was like, okay. Like, watching it now, I was like, all right. But again, looking at how it was one of those taboo things back then.
Yeah. It's interesting how there's no more that. I think the last bastion of like, oh, you do that was like ass eating 5 years ago. And I was just like, niggas do whatever. And that's okay.
And I'm trying to find out all the whatevers that we're doing. Because now there's a lot of talk about pegging.
Yes.
And then I had shared this thing on my Instagram about muffing.
Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't know this was a thing because I haven't had sex with trans women, nor am I a trans woman. So I was like, ooh, we gotta see some things. I gotta add this to the list.
Yes. Okay, so next up is episode 7. Episode 7, Tony starts dating a white man who is a politician. And
this is hilarious.
Tony finds out or assumes or sees something very precarious where Maya's husband Darnell is getting fed at his job a strawberry by a woman. And tells Maya that she thinks he's Sheen. So that's that episode.
That wasn't Tony. That was Joan who saw Darnell.
Oh, oops. I'm sorry. Everybody has 4-letter names, and this shit is fucking me up, obviously. This shit is clearly... I have been messing up this whole... I'm just going to start calling them by their archetypes. Yes, I've mixed up Maya and Tony several times before this. It's all 4-letter names. Mm-hmm. I'm about to just start saying the gold digger, the lawyer, the biracial one, and Maya. I'll keep Maya at her name. I'll keep her at the hotep because they're fucking me up. But anyway, sorry.
What I liked about this was, what was hilarious about it was the end where the councilman was talking about Tony's weave on the...
That was funny to me, too.
That took me out. I was like, that white man did not.
Yeah.
Use this black woman's weave.
As a metaphor for Los Angeles.
As a metaphor.
I wrote that down and I put mad laugh emojis. That was funny.
That took me out.
Ooh. Oh, that was funny. I wrote down girlfriends was Twitter before Twitter was Twitter. And, like, in the same way that people are like, oh, you know, Insecure is going to bring up whatever Twitter is talking about or whatever. It's interesting here because, I don't know, I guess maybe people were talking about it on, like, Black Planet or some shit like that. Or, I don't know, the party lines or whatever. But, like, every, like, hot topic within the Black community is discussed. So, like, when do you have the weave talk with your white man?
White man.
Yeah. And then Darnell's gaslighting just... annoyed me. I think that was the
boiled my blood. Exactly. Boiled my blood.
Exactly. Episode 8, Joan thinks that she is pregnant. She takes a pregnancy test that tells her that she is pregnant, and then she goes to a gynecologist and finds out that she was, in fact, not pregnant. A couple of things that were interesting about this episode was Joan's adamant belief that kids equals a dream deferred. Like, that she would just have to put everything down and not attain any sort of career success at all.
Ever again.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting because people still believe that, but I think it's to a way less extent nowadays. And it's interesting that she believed that because she has such a good community around her of people who will help her and who are invested in the success of her as well as like taking care of her child. And one of my favorite parts of the episode is when she's like, okay, it looks like I'm having this baby, y'all. And everybody comes over and William brings like a stuffed animal for the baby. And everybody's like, nah, we got you. I was like, oh, that is so heartwarming. Her community cares about her. sure.
Definitely. And what irritated me about that is that she has an example of that. Like, Maya may not be, again, there's this kind of classist undertone that Maya is her assistant and has a child. Mm-hmm. And so she, you know, that child is the reason why she doesn't have a better career. Mm. She's just an assistant. Because I'm like, yeah. If you look at Maya, she's not single. She's not a single woman doing alone, but also mm-hmm. not like a dream deferred kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
She's still working. She's still a working woman, getting it, raising her child.
There's actually a moment in that where they make the character Maya herself undercut that, though. Because she's like, girl, look at me. Granted, I had help from Darnell or whatever. But, you know, once I had my baby, and then she says something like, I stopped working for 5 years or something like that. Mm-hmm. So they actually use her as a character to demonstrate that it is a dream deferred.
Mm-hmm.
Though in real life, it is not. At some point, abortion is not considered at all for Joan. And I was like, it's not even a question. And then mm-hmm. afterwards, when they finally gather, then it's a question. I just thought that was weird.
Yeah.
And we didn't quite see why that was not considered at all for her. Like, I'm very religious, or I would never do that, or I always said, like, once I do get pregnant, I'm going to bring the child to term. It was just like, abortion didn't exist for the first 10 minutes of the episode.
I chalk that up to, again, the culture of the time.
Yeah.
Of what that was back in the early 2000s.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Your only choice is to have this baby and figure out.
Exactly.
And I was like, girl, if that's not a quick call to the Planned Parenthood, like.
One of my favorite parts about this show, and that was making me feel better about the I'm 29 and I don't have a man type shit, is how single and loving it Tracee Ellis Ross is in real life right now at this very moment. She's just like the single auntie who's just like fucking gallivanting around the world and having a good time, not aging despite her half white jeans, not aging like milk,
aging like skim milk, you know. Exactly. She's slowly.
Yeah, I just think that's a good thing to keep in mind mm-hmm. as the bullshit of the show kind of weighs down. And then I wrote down Maya is hilarious. I don't know why I said that, but I just
because something about Maya was hilarious.
You have anything else for episode 8?
No.
Okay. Episode 9 was the Thanksgiving episode. So Joan meets a fuckboy lawyer who's just trying to like get her in bed all throughout Thanksgiving, and she thinks that all of her friends have bailed on her, and they have. But then things go awry in their personal
plan.
Yeah, their personal plan. So they come through and kind of like cock block her a little bit. Kelsey Grammer was in this episode, and I was a really big fan of Frasier, and he executive produced the show. And when he was there, I was just like, I'm standing. Like, I just feel like I have actually met him. So that was because I didn't remember that happening. So I was just like really happy. So I just wrote down Kelsey Grammer himself. I am standing. Cry face. I think that's about it for me. Yeah. I didn't really have
much
for that.
I found it interesting. She met this man and he was in her home in like 20 minutes. Like,
he was and there she was going to cook a whole turkey for him.
For a whole, like, I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah, that was interesting.
It all, and again, this is, you know, TV, but all of it moved so quickly for a nigga you just met that now I am lying and about to fry a turkey and possibly burning my home down for what is going to end up be a one night stand.
Also, it upset me that her friends were not intentional about spending Thanksgiving with her. Granted, like, yes, be intentional about spending Thanksgiving with your family, but don't tell her last minute because it's just like deprioritizing platonic relationships in a way that I don't like. But then when they all came over, like, oh, my personal plans failed, she was trying to get them out to fuck. Like, dick ain't never been prioritized over Thanksgiving plans with my friends family. Like,
no.
I love these people. I don't know him. What the fuck?
I don't know this man.
Yeah.
And again, highlights this. You need to chase a man at all costs. Like, you need to get one at all costs. And I'm like, not at the cost of my house and my friends.
Yeah, no. Anything else for that one?
I just want to say that I love that you pegged him as a fuckboy because definitely that was it.
That was like the original. That was like the first fuckboy we done seen on TV. Episode 10, what is the exact premise of episode 10? Oh, yes. Okay, so Maya has decided to renew her vows with Darnell, and they've been going to therapy and all that kind of stuff. And Joan is planning the wedding, and it's supposed to be at her house, but Joan takes control because that's one of Joan's character traits. She's a control freak. And then also she needs to get married, so she exerts all of the things that she's wanted out of a wedding on Maya's vow renewal ceremony. Maya's mom, or is it her aunt? I think that's her mom. Makes dresses for all the bridesmaids, and Joan hates it, and she thinks it's low class, and she's like, oh, Vera Wang did this. Do you know who Vera Wang is? And they're like, yeah, we know who Vera Wang is. We just don't fuck with her like that. So yeah, there's this whole classist tension, and they have a falling out, and then Joan ends up coming to the ceremony and apologizes, and they make space for that apology and them making up or whatever and growing within their friendship. So one, I loved Maya's classist call out, and I wrote down Maya's classist call out !
Because she said, Joan, that is classist and egregious.
She did say egregious.
And I know big words. Yeah. She did say egregious. That's when I learned the word egregious, okay?
And Joan was like, egregious? And egregious. She was like, yeah, bitch, I do know what that means, you motherfucker. Stop talking to me like that. Stop talking to me like that. Yeah, I love that. And I also, I loved her holding her accountable, which there's moments of accountability throughout this season, and I appreciate those. And then I liked that, so like when Joan came to the ceremony after, at first Maya's like, oh, hell no. And then Joan gives like an adequate apology, and they, like, Maya stops the wedding to actually talk to Joan, and she was like, oh, that's the good thing about like not following the standards that society has set on weddings. We can always start over. And I just like that she held space for friendship in the space of a romantic space. And she was like, no, I'm going to be intentional about this, and I'm going to prioritize it because I love everybody in this room, not just this cheating ass nigga. I still fucking hate Darnell.
What I did like, one, was that, I agree with that. Two, I loved the showing of couples therapy.
Yeah.
You know, in a time where it was stigmatized a bit more than it is now, and couples therapy specifically.
Yeah.
Not just, oh, we're going to figure this out on our own, but like, let us do the interventions to make it work. Mm-hmm. There was, I don't know if you'll get to this, but there was a there's a part in that episode where William is dating a white woman.
Yes.
Or oh, entertaining, yeah. The yes, idea right. of dating white women. Mm-hmm. And there became that talk of like interracial dating and black men dating out of the race and mm-hmm. black women not. Yeah,
that was good too. Yeah, I wrote that down. I forgot to say that. I thought it was interesting. Like, some of the things have kind of aged out, I think, in regards to, oh, this is a hot topic. But some of the things, it's just like, oh, yes. And Twitter talks about that every day to this day.
To this day.
So, yeah, that was definitely one of those evergreen moments. Anything else on that episode?
No, I think okay. That's it.
Episode 11. That is an episode where Joan is accidentally in a relationship with someone who is cheating on his wife. And then there's like a little bait and switch where the person shows up to Joan's house and they think that it's actually Tony, because Tony is also sleeping with a married man. And then it's revealed mm-hmm. that man was lying. It's just a very convoluted episode.
It was
about cheating ass niggas. Yeah, it's just funny. It's just funny. That's the only mm-hmm. thing I really have about that episode, that the plot twist of who's cheating and who's not and who done it.
Yes. Like, funny. Who is the cheater? Who is sleeping with the actual married man? Who is yeah. the adulterer in this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts about that episode?
No, that was it. Okay. That was it for Frank.
Episode 12, is that 13 where it's revealed that he's a sex addict? I think 12 is where they start dating, and 13 is where it's revealed.
Yeah, okay. And 13 is where.
Okay, because 12, I wrote down nothing. So, do you have any thoughts about 12 itself?
12. So 12 starts out with them making a list about their ideal partners, what the qualities in a partner. And I remember that. Oh, so when she had met, was it Sean she had met? Yeah, in the museum.
Yes.
There was this talk by her and two of the other friends that she's like aggressive. And I didn't like that. I didn't like that, how that was displayed or how that was talked about, because you don't have to be this docile person to get a man. It was like, oh, if you're this aggressive, not even aggressive, because she really is just assertive. Joan a little aggressive. you know, but this idea of like, you can't be an assertive woman. You have to be this docile, passive person and be, you know, chased by the man, or, you know, chosen mm-hmm. by the man rather mm-hmm. than you choosing your man. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to highlight.
Mm-hmm. That was interesting because they said that, and I don't like that either, the way it's stated. But I do think that they were on to something, not in that she's wrong for being aggressive. I think she just had no fucking game.
Yeah. It was Joan.
Yeah. Like, so she was being like assertive and like talking to him and making it clear that she was interested. But then in the end, when he gives her her card to call him, she's like, no, I'm the woman. You call me or whatever. And it's funny because then she's like, oh, no, chase me. Like, I'm chasing. And now it's like, oh, no, chase me. And I think like some sort of chase and play is actually conducive to building romantic relationships. Yeah. And that is good and feels fun on either end. But she just did it wrong. Yeah. she just sucked at it. It was just bad. It was poor game. It was very cringy. But yeah, I wish that they would have actually said what it was, like what she was doing wrong. Like, I had a little finesse, girl. What the hell are you doing?
A little.
Yeah. At the end of that episode, because there's a moment between Lynn and Joan ragging on each other or whatever, and Lynn being like, you want to control everything, and Joan being like, you have no direction in life, you don't commit to anything, blah, blah, blah. So they have a falling out. And then they make up as they do, and accountability is had. And then Joan gifts Lynn a red triangle art piece that she was obsessed with in that same gallery in the end. And I was just like, oh, I love when they gift each other because it's so sweet. Like earlier in the season, Tony bought shoes for Joan that she saw one time and they were out of her size. Like the fact that she mm-hmm. thought about that Remembered and went back it. And got her shoes in her size was like, oh, you guys are so sweet when you're sweet to each other. And when you're not, yikes. All right. This is the last episode that we're going to do. It is episode 13. And this is where Joan finds out that the man who she started seeing in the previous episode is a sex addict. I just wrote down Joan sucks LMAO. she comes to his Sex Addicts Anonymous meeting and he starts getting into the nature of his sex addiction. And at one point he says like he slept with 300 women and this bitch just gets up and walks out.
I was just like. Up and out. This said no. Nope.
What the fuck?
This said nah.
How do you just leave?
This said that is it for me. Thank you.
Like, just like hold the discomfort until after he's sucking and then walk. She just left. And then he comes to her crib and she's like, I was gonna call. Have you not even called yet? What the fuck? Like, once again, like, this is not a finesse moment, but lacking tact. That's mm-hmm. what it's lacking tact. A couple other things I wrote down. I was wondering if his explanation of what he went through as what he would go through if Joan touched him was accurate. And I'm just not sure. I think like TV in general and still to this day, because I was watching something that came out in 2019 and they use sex addiction, mm-hmm. uses sex addiction as like a plot point. But I'm mm-hmm. not sure if the people writing know enough about addiction or sex addiction to really be using it as, or I don't know if they ever do it justice.
Yeah. So his explanation was that, you know, if he kisses her, he'll want to have sex with her. And then if he has sex with her, he'll want more sex and more sex. And that will eventually lead to him cheating and seeking sex out with people. You know, I don't know much.
That's the thing, right? Because like one time, I think it was on the hypersexuality episode, me and Rob talked about sex addiction and the fact that there's not much known about sex addiction.
Yes.
So it's interesting that it is a plot point and it's like, this is what I'm going to do because I'm a sex addict. Mm-hmm. But like people who study this don't know if that's what's going to happen. So you as a sitcom writer is like, I don't think you can be doing it justice because no one's doing it justice.
And I think they try to like model that on like, let's say a substance addiction like alcohol. But even then that kind of explanation doesn't fit alcoholism. Like if you have one drink does not mean you'll want more and more drinks. Mm-hmm. Typically what happens for someone who relapses is that they have one drink, there's mm-hmm. a craving for one, and then once they've done it, it's like an all or nothing kind of thinking. Oh, well, I had one cookie, let me just drink everything mm-hmm. in the house, you know. It's mm-hmm. like I already fucked up, let me go. Mm-hmm. So not like a self-control issue, but the way we cognitively frame it. Mm. And if I look at it that way, yeah, it's like at some point it's like it's framed as this lack of self-control. Like, yeah. It's this thing taking over me, and once I let it in, boom, I have no awareness or agency in what I'm doing. And it's like, no, you know, people are making bad choices and mistakes, sure, but mm-hmm. it's not, they're not possessed. Like, he's not possessed by the sex demon, in which once it's activated with a kiss, he just has to keep going and going and going yeah. and going and going.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So that's interesting. Another thing, I think the last thing that I found was interesting was, whether that's rooted in actual life or not, he as a character did say, like, this is what's going to happen to me if I kiss you and I'm concerned about it. And she's just like, not at that point, but later in the episode, she's like, and I'm a girlfriend who wants to kiss her boyfriend, like kind of like tempting him into kissing her. And I thought that that was like, that was a weird way to navigate that.
It's definitely not supportive of someone right. who's telling you that they have a problem. It's kind of like, all right, well, I want to have a drink, so I'm going to have a drink in front of
you
someone.
Could join me or not.
Like, yeah, like, no, you want to be considerate of that person.
Yeah. And like, go slow and talk about the implications of it. Like, they've talked about his sex addiction, but they didn't talk about what's next. Mm-hmm. She was just like, all right, I'm sorry for walking out on your meeting. Kiss me, nigga.
Yeah.
It was very her-centric when he's telling you that he has an issue.
You know, and that could have led to a conversation of, well, we know Joan ain't capable of this, but like, ethical non-monogamy, like, if you have an itch to scratch and I can't have sex with you all day, every day, if that's how it manifests for you.
Yeah.
What can you do, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, it also made it seem like he's been in recovery for however long he said he was, and using his sex addiction group as a support. They don't talk to y'all about coping? Like, is masturbation not a thing?
Yeah. It was a bit all or nothing.
Exactly. It's this all or nothing, I'm kind of possessed and it takes over me kind of thing. And like, no, there is masturbation. There is, later on they go into like phone sex, but like, there is other things besides actual penetrative sex that you can use to scratch your itch, if that's what it is. And none of that, you know, is touched upon in the same way that like, when she thought she was pregnant, abortion didn't even come into the picture. Like, there's just these, the other alternatives are never explored.
Yeah, which is interesting. I'm not sure if that lends it, that's because it's a 20-minute episode or if they're just not doing it. I don't know.
Yes, we have to be mindful that it is 20 minutes they are giving us.
Okay. I don't know, man. Degrassi be having, that had like 20, 25 minute episodes and they went into the shits, okay?
Yeah, they did though. They went into the shits.
Oh, man.
I gotta rewatch that.
When yeah, I was like, maybe we should do a Degrassi review. Okay. You have any other thoughts about girlfriends?
No, I'm very happy that we made it to the sex addict boyfriend, because I remember that so clearly as a child. Because I was like, we have to get there at least.
And we did. All right. If you guys have been watching, or if you all have been watching Girlfriends, you have additional thoughts, let us know. If there's any throwback shows or current shows or anything like that that you want us to review on Ask Media, let us know. So we're going to skip our Fuck You segment, which is where we read listener letters. But in the future, if you would like to ask us for some advice, share your hotels, or rant against the white cishet patriarchy, you can send your thoughts to isupodcast@gmail.com. Please include your pronouns. Because we are in the future, you can leave us a voicemail. We'll play it and respond to it on the show. You could drop us a line at 404-491-9158, both of which are in the show notes. If this episode has made you laugh, helped you learn something, made you feel good, made you question yourself in a good way, or positively moved you in any sense of the word, please leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, and let everyone you know that you love these hoes. We appreciate every single last one of yous.
Of course. And again, if you'd like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inaho Uprising without the G on Twitter, at Inaho Uprising with the G on Instagram and Facebook. Join our Facebook group by searching Inaho Uprising Community. That is CUMMUNITY. You can head to InahoUprising.com to pay a ho. And you guys can follow me, Akua, at Hey Akua Girl, where sometimes you see my face and sometimes you see my son.
Both of which are good. Both of which are good things to see. You can follow me at SlamRid on Instagram and Twitter, and there you can see the cosplays that I talk about, which are very cool, and selfies of me and all that kind of stuff, and like weird food in my Instagram story. Everybody take care of yourself this week, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.